We acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. This is Cheryl from Dja-Dja-Wurrung country.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 191 of the Beyond 90 podcast. Eric Sobihano here with Emma Burke, Magella Cart, and Dale Roots. We've all been busy, but we've made time to discuss the wonderful world of women's football for all of our wonderful subscribers. Time to check in with my co-host. Firstly, Emma, you've watched a fair bit of dub action. So how's the week been for you?
It's been interesting. It's been interesting all across the globe. My biggest disappointment so far is finding out that I can't get a San Diego Wave kit sent to Australia.
Oh.
They don't ship here.
Oh,
they have
that's
two Australians on their team.
Oh, that's
and
ridiculous.
I can't get any jerseys.
Well, surely
they have
there's
a really
a
nice home kit.
There must be a service you can find.
My only similar experience is with AGF, Matilda McNamara's Danish team. They didn't ship to Australia. And so I wrote a very nicely worded email basically saying, "Hello, I'm a big Matilda McNamara fan from Australia. I would like to blah blah blah." And then they very kindly created an item on their store just for shipping, and it was very, very expensive. I added that to the cart. Yeah. Put my address and the customization details in the notes, and I have a Matilda McNamara AGF jersey.
Yeah.
That I think it's ridiculous that Australians have to do that for an NWSL team, but yes.
I might just have to start sending them emails.
Yes.
This is the closest team to Australia geographically as well.
Mm. Yeah, so it's even more ridiculous.
Mm.
Anyway.
It's only going to cost me my entire savings to get it shipped, and they won't even do it. My greatest disappointment of the week so far.
Come on, San Diego Wave. Emma is trying to give you money, and you are obstructing
Please.
Her. You're obstructing her desires to give you money. I don't think that's good enough. Speaking of things that are potentially ridiculous, body corporate meetings. Madge is on schedule for tonight. Thankfully, it's finished, so she can join us for the pod. But other than that, how have you been, Madge?
Yeah, not too bad. We're not doing any maintenance, so we just skip through it.
Ah, yes.
It's like, yes. No, let's do nothing. I've got a podcast to get to. Yeah, look, I'm also spending my money looking up flights to sort of get to Matilda's games. That's all I ever spend my money on these days.
Yes.
So Adelaide and Sydney, I'm looking forward to it. So got those tickets, very happy.
Yep. I'm actually looking forward to seeing all of you once again in Sydney when Matilda's play China. I only know of my border corporate meetings from relatives, and now I never want to be in one, basically. But anyway. Dale, I saw the results for your teams. How are you, Dale?
Yeah, I was going to say body corporate would be a very good drag name. look, the pain persists, but so do I. Life goes on with or without football. I think there's plenty to go over that will make people more happy than my analysis of the Canberra United games and Everton losing on the weekend, but otherwise very well.
Yes, well, I mean, good to see you doing the best you can. I mean, that's, you have to when your team
exactly
can cooperate with regards to your mental health. Anyway, before we cover all of that, it's time for this week's featured Matilda, and Matilda's cap 191 is Riley Dobson. Shout out to her grassroots club, Wauchope, in far northern New South Wales, I think you'd say. She played one game for Australia on April 2014. That was against Brazil, so she only has one cap, but one cap makes you a Matilda. She was a forward known for her pace in the dub originally with Newcastle Jets, of course, her local team. I assume she moved from Wauchope closer to Newcastle at some point. But more recently... oddly enough, for someone from northern New South Wales, seen as very much a Melbourne City stalwart, and that's who she ended up finishing her dub career with. So I think, Dale, you actually named her as a Queen of the Week recently. So I think, what are your thoughts when it comes to Riley, friend of the pod and rather, and frequent appearer on this spot a couple of years ago, Riley Dobson.
Mm, I was going to say, was the focus of one of the great good news stories in dub history with her now husband, Matt, proposing to her on, I believe, her final game for Melbourne City.
Yes, yes.
And they, as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, they've just had a bub, and everything seems to be going well. But yeah, in terms of her football career, I mean, a Jets player for a long time. And then, as you mentioned, moved to Melbourne City and won basically everything there was to win with that team down there. I think, as you mentioned, the thing that she was probably best known for was basically getting up and down the field at a great rate of knots, had a magnificent engine on her and a work, really high work rate in terms
effortless sprinting. Like she just,
yeah, really high work rate in terms of getting up and down the field, which in a team like that was kind of essential because for a lot of those teams, I mean, for a lot of those years, even early in the Melbourne City journey, they kind of thrived on possession football and being able to get the ball into as much space as possible to create as much space as possible, and having a player like that really helped. But yeah, as you mentioned, I mean, she was one of the, she's a regional girly, and we love to see more of them in the comp. That, I mean, there haven't been a lot of players from kind of the far north coast. I mean, Warhope is kind of, Warhope is like west of,
yeah,
it's like west of Port Macquarie-ish. Mm. So, like, there haven't been a lot of players from up there. I mean, like, Craig Foster's from Lismore, but still, that's a long way away.
Jamila Rankin's from far northern New South Wales.
Yeah, there's a few.
So far, she's practically Queensland. Yep.
And I mean, in terms of that area, it's kind of, it's a bit of a dead zone for football specifically, because there's no Gold Coast team anymore in terms of the National League, and Newcastle kind of were left to pick up the pieces in terms of Northern New South Wales. But yeah, as I said, I mean, she was well known for her endeavour, I guess would be the word that I would use.
Yep.
And yeah, friend of the pod, of course.
And further to the Northern New South Wales point, former Brisbane Roar and College Matilda Claire Farrington, and I think is another one from there. Like, basically one of those players that are Queenslanders in spirit, if not technically, because basically the distance from Newcastle compared to their distance from Brisbane means when they go elite to the elite pathway, QAS and stuff like that just makes
it's the same
sense.
Kind of thing for people who live around Byron and...
What hospital do they go to?
Yeah, exactly. Where's your children's hospital? Not even your base hospital. You're definitely flying to Brisbane if you've got a bad injury up there.
And of course, I'm glad you mentioned Riley Dobson's farewell game with the marriage proposal, because she also scored in a farewell game thanks to the greatest assist in dub history. There will never be anything that good ever again. But Riley Dobson, she's still around, still doing commentary, and so she's still good to see her contributing to the game.
Only woman to play in the Men's Australia Cup, if I recall correctly. Played in a qualifier for her local men's team in the preliminary stages of the Australia Men's Australia Cup.
That's right, because she was, I don't know if she still is playing in a, what are we going to call this, Northern New South Wales fifth tier? Something like that.
Yeah, I'd say it's regional, regional league. To call it a pub league would be a little disrespectful, but yeah, definitely regional.
Yeah, they actually split their Australia Cup qualifiers into regions, unlike some other state feds who may wish to do so. Anyway, that's a men's football issue that came across my timeline today. But that's Riley Dobson, cap 191. And I actually am liking this because unlike kind of a few years ago when I had never seen any of these players play, now I don't actually have to do research. And I like it when I don't have to do research. Now, first up, Tilly's news, and for once, the Asian Football Confederation making us happy, because they have recommended that Australia host the 2026 Asian Cup. I agree. I think that's a fantastic idea. I won't link to this because Canberra Times are behind a paywall, but I did get our very own Stefan Moibus to basically summarize it. Basically, not much at this stage. There will be three host cities. Canberra was not invited to be part of the bid, so unfortunately for our friends in the nation's capital. I love Kieran Yap's point, because I actually forgot about this part of the last Asian Cup. Yeah, it means we'll avoid having to play qualifiers, because the quarterfinal exit meant we would have otherwise. Well, Thank goodness for that. And yeah, just another thing to spend money on. So
at least hooray, it's
more
like,
flights.
I mean, flying around Australia isn't that much cheaper, I guess, than like going to a country that's where maybe all the stadiums aren't that far apart. But yeah, look, I think it's great. It helps us build the momentum for women's football here locally again. And you know what? If you're the AFC, you'd be looking at this as a fantastic opportunity to make money. Like you look at the Matildas selling out stadiums, and like we said in the lead up to the World Cup and it came to fruition, we do love an event in Australia. So it may not be heaps of sellouts to the other games, but I think they'll still be really well attended. So I think it'll be a great tournament.
Yeah, my main contribution to that is I'm so used to giving my sleep schedule to these tournaments, and now I get to receive.
I'd much rather, as you say, it may be pricey to fly around here and, you know, get put up in hotels or put yourself up in hotels rather, or, you know, stay on your mate's couch or whatever. But like, I'd much rather this than the next Asian Cup, which is going to be in Uzbekistan in January. So,
no thanks.
Yeah. I'll be keeping my, well, I'd have to purchase a puff jacket, but you would be much happier weather-wise in Australia than you would be in Uzbekistan, I think. But yeah, it's really good news. Even though we still don't have a World Cup host for 2027.
Yeah. Speaking of things I may spend my money on, but yeah, that's a problem for people much more highly paid than myself. But yeah, if it's three cities, what are we thinking? Sydney, Melbourne, plus one for this?
Sure. Probably.
Yeah.
I feel like it'll end up being
whatever
Brisbane.
State government gives enough money.
Yeah, I think it'll be. I think you're right. I think it'll be Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane. Melbourne
or,
will have.
Or I could see Adelaide if they decide to pony up the money.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
I could see South Australia stealing this off Queensland. Or, outbeating Queensland is the better wording.
Well, that's a good point also, because as anybody who would be following the news at the moment would know that the whole Olympics thing with Queensland at the moment.
True.
Just like,
speaking of body corporate.
when we got the Olympics, I was like, you know what? I'm not so anti the Olympics, because this time they've stopped the expectation that you have to build these gigantic new things all the time. And I went, and these sort of events bring good infrastructure, and it just seems like we're not even going to do that.
Yeah. In fairness, Sydney could host the Asian Cup by itself. With the three really? Big rectangular stadiums that it has.
Yep.
And that's why
I'd love
thinking
to see a bid book pretending.
You know what?
Parker
I could see a Gold Coast. Like,
remember
you
when,
know, like
when
you
Australia
know,
was going to host the Men's World Cup, and they were like, "Yes, Blacktown. That's a totally different city."
It is. Damn it! How dare you,
Your Honour? What do I have
hey,
to say?
Gold Coast, man. Sorry, I was derailing this.
Well, no, I was just thinking stadium-wise, like, you know, as far as a final or semi-final where Australia is potentially involved, yep, Stadium Australia. I know there's been lots of talk about the MCG as well, but whatever. You know, they're going to be the ones for Australia involved. But other than that, I mean, the crowds that you might get for the other games, yeah, like Hindmarsh, perfect. But, yeah, as an alternative, like the Gold Coast Stadium's also a great sort of, I think just under 30,000 seat stadium. Yeah. But I can't see it going to Townsville, what with being in the middle of rugby league season. So, but yeah, a few options will be interesting to see where it lands.
Yeah. So I think we've all had our views on watching games at Sydney's Olympic Stadium. I think one stadium per city means, yeah, it's going to be Homebush, not Parramatta, but oh well. Yes, the MCG has discussion of the MCG has come up again, unfortunately. Did like Kieran Jaff's point, of course, everything I refer to in the show notes generally, but the AFC, he said the AFC made the Young Matildas play in snow and has previously made people play in the heat. They're not going to draw the line at the MCG because of the shape, so yeah,
no,
that's right, of course not.
I wish they would.
Yeah, please. I mean, I could see them using Etihad, but now that the AFL owns that, I mean,
Yeah.
It would probably, the most sense would probably just be to play it at Swan Street, because then like the Storm could play it at Docklands, and then yeah, I mean that's what happened during the last World Cup. So that's what happened during the World Cup. So I mean that could work, but yeah, it's a bit of a funny one. They could play AFLX on Swan Street. I don't know. That was a thing.
It was funny, like, yeah, they made the Broncos play at the Gabba.
At the Gabba, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, which I thought was odd. It's like you've got, you know, QE2 and the Gold Coast. So then they just could have scheduled a bit better, but anyway.
Yeah, and QE2 obviously has hosted rugby league in the past. So,
yep.
I mean, like, that would have been a possibility. But, yeah, it's kind of a funny one. It's, you know, bubbles everywhere, but not a drop to drink. We've got all these stadiums, but we don't know which one's best.
Yep.
Of course, also, it's 2026. That might be enough time for Suncorp Stadium to remember how to provide football with a proper pitch as well.
Not when they're looking to increase the number of concerts.
Yeah.
Well.
Yet again.
Let me do my research on Adelaide then.
Yeah.
Look, at least we know.
Actually, have never been.
I'm not getting my hopes up to be able to not have to pay for a hotel during the Asian Cup in 26.
Oh, I just want to walk down Caxton Street.
It is a brilliant precinct and to be able to do that. Yeah,
it was amazing when Brazil were in Brisbane. We were there, match. But
yeah.
I think not getting your hopes up is correct. Also, I have just remembered. I would be hoping to cheer on two countries in such a tournament. Ooh, that's good. That could be costly. Oh well. this tweet is all about Kieran Yap, but I just love his spirit after he bought he got a ticket for at the Adelaide game between Matildas and China. I have no idea where I'm sitting. I have no idea where I'm sleeping, but I'll see you in Adelaide. I feel like that's something Madge can identify with.
Oh yeah, I mean I've got the ticket, but I don't have a flight there or somewhere to stay yet either. So
I have a ticket. I have a flight to Adelaide.
And all I know is staying in Adelaide like that extra day or something and doing something before coming back to Sydney. I've seen enough of Sydney.
So Dale and I, oddly enough.
Yeah, so have we. pro tip, if you don't have a hotel room, 24-hour gym.
Oh, yes, all right. I think my gym membership would work down there, so I just need to find one. Yeah.
I'm going to do a free trial somewhere.
I do remember somebody from... they might have been from the Cove sleeping in a 24-hour gym in Melbourne many, many moons ago because they were slightly inebriated and forgot where the hotel was.
That is incredible. See? We love a solutions-oriented mindset.
Modern problems require modern solutions.
They do. So let's get on to the recent round of DOP. And, of course, there was a midweek game as well. So a Wanderers 4, Canberra 1. And Michelle Heyman scored after 50 seconds. And then
I turned off.
Yeah, that was the smart decision. Because after that, it was. Kieran is like minus. We need to start crediting this genius. The headline for his match report, Caspers haunts Canberra defence with a supernatural performance.
It was very good.
All the Holly Caspers ghost puns, loved it. But yeah, she scored twice. She set one up for Ella Buchanan as well. I was there and I've forgotten who scored the other goal, but apologies to that person.
That's okay.
I should probably check that now. But just,
I think the thing with this was just like the both teams had a whole bunch of players out with the young Tillies, and it was just that I think that Wanderers were much better organised and definitely had a little bit more up front in terms of service as well. Like we'll get onto it later, but for Emma Ilioski at centre back, experiment for want of a word is just definitely not working. You can't have a player who has played for so long in a kind of wing back position where she's advanced so often to then expect her to be able to physically hold her own in the center of the park. And yeah, once like the goal was nice. And then, as I said, Wanderers just kind of kicked it into second gear and went through the paces really. It's kind of tough one to analyze.
Yeah, it's also Madison McComiskey was the other goal. So that was her first dub goal as well. So just a little bit more salt for Canberra wounds, like
I was going to say,
McComiskey being
former you didn't want her as well?
It was many you didn't want.
Tough this. Scene.
Yes. Then Marissa Lordanic tweeting just about Michelle Heyman scored so many goals, and she did some research. Heyman has scored in 64 of the 90 minutes of a regular game of dub football. So obviously the first minute in the game against the Wanderers. And then she said she looks forward to making Heyman's scoring army a thing in Canberra's last four games of the season.
I wonder if she had a minute hat trick.
Like
goals in 1 minute.
Ooh.
Probably. That's interesting. I think with the number of goals, that's more likely than not.
She would have to have. She scored 100
at least
goals.
Double up on quite a few. Yeah,
for sure.
It would actually be quite unlikely that she doesn't have one. She must have one. Yeah. So, yeah. And for those of you who don't know what Scorigami is, that's an NFL account that tracks all scores of NFL games to find a unique one. We had one in the most recent NFL season. So, yeah. Heyman Scorigami. But, yeah, that's, I think, let's not hurt Dale's feelings too much because there's plenty more sad times for Dale.
There's more to come.
Yeah, there is. Adelaide 1, Brisbane 2, and Madge is I thought you were fixing some kind of equipment. Yeah, you're back.
I have
we need you back to talk about this.
Wait, it can in. So let me be happy. Happy, good win. Look, it wasn't the most exciting game in the world. I mean, both teams are sort of maybe showing why they're towards the bottom of the table, sort of a lot of turnovers in midfield. But I think, Brisbane were worth their win. The first goal from Della Hart was great. She just kind of took off down the sideline. And it's just one of those times where, yes, don't cut it back in, just shoot. And she did and buried the goal for her first goal for Brisbane, I think only second goal in her career. So,
that sounds right.
But, Adelaide responded with, really nice through ball that, I can't remember who it was that put it through, but took it around Keely Richards in goal and leveled it up. And then, Brisbane had a couple of like point blank chances that were making me pull my hair out. Like I think Tamika Yallop had one and I can't remember who had the other chance, like just basically tap ins in front of goal that, the Adelaide keeper just made themselves, big and kept out. But slightly dubious offside goal for Tamika Yallop, but I think Brisbane were showing enough to deservedly take the win and out of finals now. I think that's been confirmed after the Wanderers beat Perth. So that's sort of like Brisbane, Adelaide and Canberra all out of finals contention now, I'm not sure Canberra might. No, are they out as well?
No,
I know they had.
They
I thought they had games in hand, but
they had to win the rest of their games, and they didn't.
Look, I mean, it's. I guess now for Brisbane fans are just kind of like, well, can we possibly spoil some parties on the way in to sort of just keep things spicy and interesting? So, good win away from home.
Yeah, and I noticed Della Harp's goal. Adelaide had shown that vulnerability to the runner coming from deep and wide. I think that Caitlin Torpy had a field day at Adelaide earlier in the season, but they still something that they need to work on. Also, Ireland's own Deborah and Della Harp scoring the day before St. Patrick's Day was lovely.
Oh.
Next game, Emma, watch this. Western Sydney Wanderers 1, Perth Glory 0, and Sophie Harding just... the match winner when there was nothing else on and she just decided to hit the ball as hard as she possibly could.
Yeah, I mean, who'd have thought? Sophie Harding, she scores goals. New one to me. Haven't seen that before. It was really nice, actually, like a proper team goal. It was built up out of Liv Price down in defence, hit a couple of players. The assist was really nice, like overhead ball. That Harding ends up hitting from outside the 18-yard box, beats Porokino in goal for Perth. And, it was just lovely. Not much to be said really for Perth. You could see that they were trying. They didn't try hard enough. It was very amusing though when Hannah Lowry took out the flagpole, the corner flag. She just took it right out, trying to deliver a corner kick. But that was about all that Perth took from this game, it seemed. Which is a bit rough for them.
Yeah, it's like shout out to both the assistant ref Amber Morris and whatever that ball kid was, because they actually changed it pretty quickly. Like I don't know if they've updated their procedures with their ball kids to if one's on corner flag, if four of them are on corner flag duty, because that was they did, it was actually pretty efficient all things considered. But Hannah Lowry, she killed that corner flag, absolutely
she did, gone, dead and gone.
Yes. And then speaking of things being killed, Wellington's finals chances. Wellington 2, Sydney 4. And Courtney Vine also scoring goals. Apparently that's still a thing. Who would have thought?
Crazy stuff.
Dale, I think you were the one that watched that.
I mean, yeah, this kind of felt like a kind of game that had been coming, to be perfectly honest, or a performance that had been coming. Sydney had gone for so long without really being able to finish, and then it was like they were like, you know, goals were like buses. You waited forever, and then four came at once. They didn't start. Like Abeni wasn't on the team sheet, so Hawksby got the armband, I believe, and then Talon Henniker started up front on the right. And yeah, Vine just had an absolute field day with this game. She had a fantastic goal in the first half, directly off a corner from Hawksby. Basically, found her on outside the area on the half volley and just kind of whipped her leg around it into the far post, inside the far post. And then she scored another one in the second half. Tiana Jaber had an own goal. And then Jordan Thompson, her second goal of the season. But yeah, Wellington made a game of it. It was 3-0 up. 1 point just before the hour mark. And then Cox and Speckmeyer both scored to make it 3-2. I don't really know how much Cox knew about the goal that she scored, but that's okay. And then, yeah, Thompson scored in the 74th to kind of seal the win. But yeah, this was just like classic dub, like real kind of park, local park footy vibes. Some really good performances. I was actually quite impressed with Abby Lemon in this one. I think she's definitely grown from the performance that she put in at Parramatta, where she got hooked after halftime. Mm-hmm. She set Vine up for a goal, or set Vine up for a chance that probably should have been taken. But yeah, Sydney definitely still in need of a fit nine. Shea Connors we had a sub in this game as well, if I recall correctly. Connors came. Yes, we did. Sienna Sodesca took Connors off in stoppage time after she came on, I think just before. It was just after Kirsty Fenton. So she got swapped for Kirsty Fenton after a quarter hour. But yeah, there was just like, as we were talking about off mic, there was a moment after Vine scored. I think she scored a first, and then she was copping it from the little corner of yellow, and then, or the yellow fever, and then she kind of gave it back and then went and got a photo with them all afterwards. Good vibes, great times up in Porirua. So yeah, it was a good game. It was a fun game to watch. This is a good ad for the league, in my humble opinion.
Yeah. Also, Kaylee Talon-Henniker's first start, and I think she created an own goal, but at least put enough pressure on. Was it the J-Bone goal? She was like in the vicinity and just had defense.
Had a kind of crossed it across from the right hand side. Well, kind of flat ball across the area from the right hand side, and then ricocheted off someone and into J-Bone. But yeah, she's only young. They've still got a few players to come back from injury.
And many, many young Matildas as well.
And yeah, a whole bunch of young Matildas potentially to come back this week as well, as you say.
Yeah. And there was a awful Kirsty Fenton injury. Don't really want to talk about it. Doesn't look good. So we're waiting official confirmation of how bad it actually is. Also, things on Twitter. Darcy Malone came on as a 92nd minute substitute. Sydney FC said congratulations on making a Sydney FC debut. It's one slight problem. It's not a Sydney FC debut. She made two appearances for them in 2018. I quote tweeted them with photographic evidence taken by Abby Lemon's mom Kelly, and then the tweet got deleted. So I like the Sydney FC media team, but there are no Darcy Malone inaccuracies on my watch.
That's the best way to deal with a tweet that you get wrong. Just delete it.
Yeah, sorry. Just like,
don't reply. Just get rid.
Get rid. So yeah, it's funny. I was having a chat with a friend and said, "Well, now there's no acknowledgement of Darcy coming on." And then I said, "Well, there doesn't need to be special acknowledgement coming on. Wasn't a debut. I just said it." So, sorry, Robbie. Sorry. I've forgotten his name. I really shouldn't have. Who's the other? Yeah.
David. He's ahead of me.
David Warner. I'm sorry, Dave. But yes, sometimes these things have to be done. What are we up to in the run sheet? Just briefly, the two games in Victoria. Victory nil, Melbourne City nil. Sometimes it doesn't work in attack for both teams. The home of the Matildas, it's nice, but it's still ultimately designed as a training venue. So the lack of shade, I think that was noted upon somewhere in social media, because only available to Victory fans, and perhaps not the best venue for a derby, because you will actually have away fans for Victory versus City. But that's something. Victory need to think about. Also, Western United 1, Newcastle 3. That's Newcastle. That's two seasons in a row. Newcastle have won away at Western United, because they won in Ballarat last year. And a lovely finish from Libby Copus-Brown, an even better goal from Lauren Allen, and the standard Serena Bolden goal. And just Newcastle, let me look at this table. Yeah, keeping their finals chances around. I think they're the only team outside the six with a realistic chance of sneaking in. They are 3 points behind Western Sydney Wanderers in sixth place. But it's good to see the Jets keeping it alive. And in terms of their own local rivalry, they'll need to, because as things stand, Central Coast Mariners, courtesy of their 4-1 win over Canberra, now have as many finals appearances in the dub as the Jets, despite being in the comp for 13 less seasons. So that's something the Jets might need to think about. So part two of Dale's
stat.
Yes.
That's shades of Adelaide never having played it in the finals up until
2022.
Yeah, and then getting immediately dumped
by Melbourne then, Victory.
And for all of our talk about distance derby finals, look what's happened. What happened to Perth?
We should never make predictions on this podcast ever.
So
some of us can make predictions. I said Sophie Harding was getting called up, and she got called up. I said Michelle Heyman was in, and she's in. Some of us can make predictions.
Yes.
But only very few times.
Yes.
Two predictions. That's it. That's the cutoff. No more predictions for me.
Oh, I feel great shame every time I look at this table. It's like, my predictions have aged like a bottle of milk being kept at room temperature. That is awful for me and others. But we dared to dream. It just didn't work out this time. But part two of Dale's trauma. Mariners 4, Canberra 1. Mariners 4-0 up after 35 minutes, and then like rubbing it in by bringing out all the celebrations.
Ladies and gentlemen, never love.
Never,
it's the key lesson.
Would not recommend.
Never love anything. Also, I think I said that once after a loss, and my friends have been saying that to me ever since after.
Shout out to the Canberra United media people who put, fun fact, we have never lost at Central Coast. We have never lost.
No.
They said they've never lost to the Mariners.
Oh.
Away to the Mariners before today. They have lost at Central Coast Stadium to Melbourne City.
Unlucky, yeah.
But yes.
Look, not the best. Again, not the best prediction or tweet to tweet. This was definitely moments before disaster, and it was a disaster. I don't know what it is. As you said, like Canberra, just they either score super early and then just go on to concede heaps of goals, or just concede really early and then continue conceding heaps of goals. And these goals definitely got conceded. But I mean, in fairness, Central Coast looked really good in the first half. They were all over Canberra, and I mean, when you have like Kai Simon's kind of playing herself back into form, and Ergamal was again really good in this one. She got the first goal in this game. But yeah, Central Coast were definitely good for the win. I thought they kind of would have kept going in the second half, but they just looked to be comfortable. And then Nicoletta Flannery got a goal late on, and that would have really annoyed Casey Dumont, because she didn't have a lot to do in this game.
She's done. She made two saves, but yeah, didn't work out. The pinball didn't work out for her. That was
Yeah.
a bit unlucky from a Mariners defensive standpoint. But yeah, I mean, does this count as back-to-back finals appearances for the Mariners? They made the finals the last time they were in the comp. Anyway.
Oh, well. I mean, in cricket, hat-tricks at the end of a spell onto the start of a new spell still count as a hat-trick. Therefore, this is
back-to-back finals appearances for the Mariners. Well
exactly.
done to everyone.
Three wickets in a row. It doesn't matter if there's a spell in between.
Lovely. Love your positivity.
That's what I bring to the show.
If you say so. No, I've got, well, not that I can judge, to be honest. Upcoming dub fixtures. So on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time for some Wellington versus Adelaide. I think that's at Botterill as well. And then Saturday, 4 p.m., Melbourne City versus Mariners. And then also 4 p.m., Newcastle versus Victory. And then 6 p.m. Saturday, it's a big one, Wanderers versus Western United at the venue known as the Rudy Hill Turf Farm, possibly not affectionately. But anyway. Then Sunday, 2 p.m., Canberra versus Wellington, Capital Clash. Sunday, 4 p.m., Sydney versus Adelaide. I think that's at Leichhardt. And then also Sunday, 4 p.m., Brisbane versus Perth. So... yeah, I commentary duties mean I can't do this, but I am really intrigued by Kat Smith returning to Wanderers Football Park. That will be she'll have thoughts. But I don't know if anyone else has any thoughts about this. Also, the week after Canberra playing Sydney on Wednesday 27th of March at McKellar Park, the game stopped by lightning, but that's a 4 p.m. kickoff, which is rough even for the locals such as Stefan. But
yeah, I was just thinking, and that game will be restarted with a drop ball, I believe.
Oh, so it's not... Oh. So that's the competition rules. It doesn't go back to...
I believe so, because the game was because the game was suspended. It will probably be with a drop ball, because remember the bucket game incident was restarted.
Yes.
The same amount of time on the clock.
Sounds like... A-leagues
when was it abandoned? It was abandoned early?
Like 14 minutes in, I think.
Oh, okay. I guess it's not that far.
Yeah.
I mean, you can also, like, you could be home for dinner.
Yeah.
So that's also a good
thing. That might be why it's 4.
Finish about 6 o'clock.
Canberrans can get home for dinner and Sydney can get home at something resembling a reasonable time.
Yeah.
I mean, if they leave straight after the game, yeah, you're right. They'll get home at about, like, if they're all in the city, they'll get home at about 9:30, 10 o'clock. So it's probably the best thing.
Yeah. And right, well, the A-Leagues have changed the rules. There was an A-League men's game many, many, many years ago, and it involves Gold Coast United. That's how long ago it was. It was called off due to, I think, flooding pitch. And then this is like Gold Coast versus Central Coast Mariners, and they just redid the whole thing again. So, yeah. Well, but we'll see on the 27th what they actually do with that. Not actually familiar with that part of the competition regs. Yeah, so that's... coming up.
But yeah, I mean, interesting games for premiership sort of, I think if we're looking at that now. So you've got, you know, Western with a tough one against Wanderers. Mm. Sydney, you'd think, you know, they should be looking okay against Adelaide. So, you know, Western wanting to sort of keep that premiership title going. But then the other one that's also intrigues me is Newcastle and Victory. So ooh, Newcastle wanting to sneak into finals, you know, being able to take out a team above them. We might have a fairly good idea of what finals look like after the end of this round, potentially.
Also, third versus fourth, Melbourne City versus Mariners.
I was just going to say.
They're both trying to sneak into the top two and get that double chance or however the finals work, but yeah.
Yeah, so, I'm interested in that one.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, City haven't really been firing on all or any cylinders as of late. But Central Coast have been very good. So I think that'll be a good one.
And if you're not really bothered about these finals permutations, if you just want to see chaos, Canberra versus Wellington, you know it makes sense.
This is true. This is the City Derby.
Anything could happen in that game.
Yeah, and anything will happen. Based on the games that we've seen, I would say it's either going to be a barn burner or a time burner, I guess. I don't know.
I don't I like that turn of phrase. News this week. Yeah, we were discussing pre-pod. The Olympics draws this week. So I think Thursday morning, Australian Eastern Daylight Time.
At six in the morning, we get to watch people swirl the little plastic balls around again to not mix them up, just spin.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder who they have doing the draw.
Oh, good shout.
Who was it? I remember it was Alexi Lay, like
the Alexi Long.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, for the last time.
You know what? He's the one I remember because he was most annoying.
I think Carly Lloyd was there too.
Yes.
Oh. But the fact that Alexi Lawless was there was like that stands out more.
Yeah.
Mm. Americans do not interact with this podcast.
Oh, Julie Dolan's there.
Oh, maybe
he was holding, I think.
Camille Abeli or Didier Deschamps, because it is the Paris Olympics. Mm-hmm. So that would make sense. I mean, Hervé Renard and Didier Deschamps are both French, so who knows?
So many options.
Yeah, I think they've had Celia Sašić do it before. They've had a whole bunch of other players. They usually have one player per thing, but I wouldn't be surprised if, there's a whole bunch of, like Samuel Eto'o. He won a Olympic medal, maybe. I don't know. These are just vibes-based answers.
Yeah.
And also, so many options. And also, in terms of the actual draw itself, so many options, and they're all terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
There's no group of death because they're all. It's tournament death. Of death, actually. It's
as it should be.
Yep.
And yeah. England killer, no filler. Didn't want it.
Oh, yeah. You're right. They're just, well, you know, the Paris Olympics, it's not for every country. But New Zealand's there. So
it's not for every country.
But it is for New Zealand.
Yes.
And it's for us.
We haven't got the final two African teams in just yet, but this is going to be a spicy one. We should know them. I think their last games are
April, I thought.
Yeah, in a couple of weeks, 1st to 9th of April, Zambia and Morocco, Nigeria and South Africa. So that's, I mean, either way, Zambia were super interesting last time. Obviously, Nigeria are always there. So it'll be interesting to see who goes through from that.
And we will be talking through our traumas about whatever the swirling balls and whatever group we get in the next podcast. So you can look forward to that. Now, just a brief Euro 2025 funding update. I think we covered that about a couple of months ago, just about how women's Euro 2025 wasn't being funded as well as it could have been. These cities and cantons, which I believe is a Swiss version of a province, so far pledged 65 million Swiss francs. And so the Swiss Council of States have agreed to a motion demanding the Federal Council support the Women's Euro with 15 million more francs. Yes, yes, please. You might as well give something back because your country's really expensive. So yeah, please fund this properly, Switzerland. Now, what is the this week's player overloading disgrace is the proposal for annual under 17 World Cups. Why? This is we had Bianca Rec, a tweet embedded in the pod notes, basically saying, we talk about player welfare all the time, player welfare all the time. Is anyone thinking about education, clubs, or physical psychology impact? Probably not. Although Emma summed it up the best in all caps, when are these children meant to go to school?
In an ideal world, we wouldn't have school. Children would take up vocational education.
From what age, Dale? Keep going.
They yearn for the fields.
They yearn for the fields. We need to be teaching these kids how to mow grass. No, you're right.
Working in the fields like they used to.
Yeah. If it was good enough for me, it was good enough for you. This is an absolutely cooked idea.
Well,
straight up.
In my day, we went to school when we were 17. Don't know about you people, but that's what we did.
I don't know what the thinking is.
Who's paying to go see this?
Yeah, I mean,
who's paying to see 60-year-olds?
crowds. I mean,
is Morocco paying FIFA, I don't know, to host this for 5 years in a row, whatever it is?
But is it also being driven by what? Well, I mean, are there some federations who maybe want to have more of a rotating sort of every year, want to put a different team out? Are they?
I think they'd the least have to do that. Like, yeah, they would have to implement some kind of rule that you can't be taking the same 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds. Like, you can't. Because when are they going to go to school? Literally, when are they meant to go to school?
There's a centralized scouting option for, like,
I know Ray Dower has said it. Ray Dower's network is set up that they could rotate. And so they could take a bunch of junior tillies 1 year and then none of them go the next year. They know enough players to make that work. But
which again just makes it seem like it's rigging the whole system.
Not everyone can do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's again just going to be something that rigs the whole system towards, you know, the teams that already have the ability to do that. So, and you know, and then just puts a greater burden on those nations that maybe don't have the ability to have that sort of breadth of player pool and scouting and development. But I don't know. It's
like, no one's going to pay to continuously go to Morocco to watch children play football. I'm sorry. Sorry to the 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds and 16-year-olds. But
Scouts are just looking to find those players to then take into club teams.
But they're not, no one's making any money off of this, right? Because
international transfers, like, you can't do it till they're 18.
Yeah, I'm thinking like more sponsor visibility. I mean, they might have to tighten the rules to say that only 16 and 17-year-olds can play in the competition so that they have to have forced turnover.
Mm. But then what's the point?
But then it's also like if you have an under-17s World Cup every year, then first of all, it completely devalues the point of having a World Cup. But also, it takes away the fact that you would then, like, how are you qualifying for these tournaments?
Yeah.
How are you having European and Asian and North American, like, how are you having confederational championships? How are you having, like, you're pushing everything up the ladder from club land into national team land, which I think is what FIFA are trying to do in order to gain more control, which means that they'll be putting greater controls into what national teams can do in terms of facilities that they have to have and things like that. Like, from that side of things, I can see why FIFA are trying to do it. They're like, oh, we're trying to improve the professionalism of the game. But like, these are children. Like, these are like, these kids should be like playing Fortnite or working at McDonald's. It just feels like a real brain fart. Too many people staring in the mirror after a work night, idea. It doesn't make any sense to me. And also, as you said, it's like, Morocco hosting it for 5 years, who's going to go to Morocco? Yes, I know that it's close to Europe, et cetera, et cetera. It's probably got great facilities, but still, like, it's just mind-numbing. It just doesn't make any sense. There was the proposal a few years ago to have a World Cup every 2 years, and Gianni Infantino farted that out of his cranium.
Look, I to me, it does reek of just softening everyone up for that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, but if we're already doing it 1 year, we'll make it better. We'll do it every 2 years, guys.
Yeah. The biggest question for me is not even in terms of the players playing or going to school or anything, but like the actual logistics around the tournament is like, how are you going to determine who plays in what? Is there going to be a qualification tournament every year for every confederation? It beggars belief, the kind of stuff that these people come up with.
Like, are we going to, if they do this, if we end up with like every two-year World Cups, are we going to lose our Mickey Mouse tournaments? Are they going to take the She Believes Cup away?
No, they can't do that.
Please.
They can't do that.
We already lost the Arnold Clark.
Yeah, the Arnold Clark.
I was just going to say, we are losing the ground, like the recipes, guys. We can't do this.
Yeah.
Even remember what ours are called.
Cup
of Nations?
Cup of Nations, yes.
Yeah. Where's the Yongchang International Invitational Tournament in all this? Won't they think of us? Anyway.
Algarve, people want to go to Portugal, damn it.
Yeah. In fairness, as long as I keep the Algarve.
Well, that's still going, right? Cyprus. And the Pinatar Cup.
Yeah. Like, the Mickey Mouse cups of this world need their time.
That's what, yeah.
Don't take them from us.
And I think, of course, we speak kind of in jest, but I mean, that's kind of related to this tweet from She Scores Bangers. More competitions, more qualifiers, more games, more traveling, less rest, less safe training, less fit players, etc. The game's booming at an exponentially fast rate, but there needs to be room to allow for safe training programs and research implementation to catch up. Although Madge said in a previous spot, there is the research, you actually just need to start paying attention to it. But yeah, like, as you can joke about these Mickey Mouse cups, but you can't have everything being ultra serious because it's just not good for the players. You need these less serious windows as well for your tournaments named after car dealerships and whatnot.
And it also feels like it's just exacerbating the issue that a lot of the professional clubs are having, in that there's the drop-off in that they have all of these academies and so many players coming through those academies, but not every player gets to make it. And it just feels like it's just adding more on to that sort of pathway and pile. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's giving cannon fodder. Like, they're just going to be churning more and more players that are going to be promised greatness. Because like, yeah, you went to one of the 50,000 under-17s World Cups.
Yep. You represented your country.
Like, you're not going
to
make
a prospect.
Mm. Like, being sent off to war and not coming back.
It does. Yeah, that's a good comparison. I'm just thinking of the scene in All Quiet on the Western Front when he has been, the soldier's been at war for a number of years, and there's a cut between him as a fresh-faced young man and then him in the war. And I'm just thinking of, like, yes, this is my third tour of duty to Morocco with the under-17s.
See, yes. I thought you were going to say Starship Troopers.
Oh, that is a good shout.
Yeah.
I'm
like going like shout. Later in the movie when like they're all like, you know, 14-year-olds, the new recruits. Yeah.
Yeah. That is a film that is very funny.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this has been beyond 90 minutes of film.
What did everyone think of Poor Things? Anyway.
Now, this next one, well, it's a bit unhappy. I mean, yeah, I think it's a little bit better than I thought it was going to be, but yes, I mean, those of you such as ourselves that spend way too much time on Twitter, would know during a pre-match pressure for Chelsea versus Arsenal, in the same sentence, Emma Hayes said player-coach relationships and player-to-player relationships are inappropriate. So it all kicked off on Twitter. Hayes later clarified in a post-match presser, it wasn't right for me to use the term inappropriate. I mean, I can't judge people for using the wrong words on a mic, on a hot mic, but yeah, just so I think hopefully that's something she can mend in her remaining time with Chelsea. But I think there was still a broader discussion to have, because as Emma was pointing out pre-pod, it's the discussion has turned away from player coach relationships, which we all agree are no bueno, to just not liking lesbians, which is,
yeah, that's kind of what it looks like. Yeah. A lot of the language immediately got turned, and it's just very silly to me, because the actual player coach relationships are an abuse of power, and that is plain as day to see. Player-player relationships are not that. Like, are they maybe a bad idea for your workplace? Possibly. But it's not an abuse of power. And I think that's the real key thing that has become, like, the point of the conversation has shifted away from what it should have been on. Because it was actually, this whole thing came up because another coach is being investigated for having an inappropriate relationship with a player. And now we're all of a sudden being like, actually, gay women, we don't like them. Like, guys, can we focus? Can we focus? No,
yeah,
we can't.
We need to chew gum and walk at the same time. Unfortunately, we're struggling to do either.
Yeah.
I mean, the point, as you say, the point that she made about player-coach relationships, I think, is fairly well documented, and a lot of the stuff that we've talked about on this pod in the last kind of couple of months has definitely covered that. Mm. But yeah, the old lesbian mafia trope is never a fun one to be played out in what is one of very few safe spaces for queer women.
Yeah, it's very tired as well. Like, we've been doing this for a long time, guys. Can we get something new, at least, if we're going to keep running this one?
Can you at least call it the Sapphic Cartel? Like, do you want
to
go through the thesaurus?
Get a name change or something. Like,
yeah,
something
we need a rebrand. Yeah.
Something new.
The Sapphic Cartel is very good.
I can't remember what tweet I was replying to, but I didn't want to. I wanted to change my wording to not attract a certain element of Twitter, and I thought, they won't know what this means. So that's what I used, and I encourage everyone to use that.
Just thinking of Breaking Bad, but all of the Mexican guys are lesbian women that all work together. and it's called Breaking Workplace Rules. I don't know where we're going.
We can workshop the title, but yeah, it sounds like a series I want to watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Breaking Codes of Conduct?
Breaking.
We're so close.
Yes. Anyway, bad.
Yeah. But, I've got a lot of embedded tweets about the topic I thought was good. I think the couple of the fine folk from the Counterpress pod, the English pod, just basically saying, yeah, if you're aligning coach-player relationships with player-player relationships, you're fundamentally misunderstanding the power and balances of play. That was Jesse Parker Humphreys. And also, Becky Taylor Gill, it's fine. Oh, yeah, it's fine if queer people only engage with women's football because of visibly queer players. That's how Australian women's football has got a new lot of fans recently, by the way. That's a big factor. Mm. And yeah, debating this instead of how to safeguard players from inappropriate relationships is why equating player relationships with player coach relationships is dangerous. That's Becky. And I had to make it lighten it up with some of these other tweets. Oh, Becky Taylor Gill. However professional the WSL gets, I'm sorry, but you will not be able to stop the lesbians from doing lesbianism. It's in the DNA of our great league. The WSL was built on the backs of lesbian chaos.
Yeah,
someone in the reply said it stands for the World of Soccer Lesbianism.
Exactly.
Then, before the clarification, Jen, saying at Kiera Walsh, extra I saying. Emma Hayes slandering player-to-player relationships is a bad look, but it's even funnier when she's about to go to the U.S. national team who literally created player-player relationships. And this last one, oh my goodness. Copsy at Thorpey. I don't know how to say that. By the way, I don't even know why Emma is complaining. The couples in her team are mostly peaceful. She should ask Jonas what his eyes have seen. Anyway.
And we say no more, and we turn the page.
Yeah. Turn the page. Yes. Next topic. Sensible tweets. I just like the little corner of yellow. My nickname for Mackenzie Barry, the Kiwi Maldini, catching on to the extent where corner of yellow posted Mackenzie Barry's head photoshopped adorably badly onto Paolo Maldini tackling someone. So yeah, love to see that. And she was the Phoenix fans player of the match for their game against Sydney. Of course she was. So time for Aussies Abroad, and I'm sorry, Emma. Chelsea versus Arsenal. But before that, funny tweets. At WFC Arsenal, Emma Hayes is going to have a heart attack when she sees our Love Island FC tonight. And then, and also the debut of Sam Kerr stickers. A photo of a backflipping Sam Kerr. Sam Kerr is on fire. Met police are terrified. Yeah, they probably are. So,
it sounds like they are.
You know who else would have been terrified? The staff at the club shop.
Yeah, great segue. Because in case you've been hiding away from WOSO Twitter for the last week, Friday Night Football, WSL, Chelsea versus Arsenal. Chelsea hosting. Arsenal brought their white socks to the away game. But they couldn't wear them because Chelsea were using white socks. And so Arsenal had to obtain black socks from the Chelsea store and apparently pay for them, thus leading to a 30-minute delay in kickoff. I could have slept in for 30 minutes more.
Tape, an essential part of every kit person's kit bag, always comes in handy. Brisbane Roar knows that very well.
Yes, they do.
Now to Arsenal.
I was going to say,
they still had to tape the socks.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm surprised that they didn't just tape the socks, tape the white socks, cover the whole sock in tape.
No, so they ended up buying socks, and then they ended up buying, I can't recall, is Adidas the kit sponsor for Arsenal? I'm pretty sure it is.
Yep.
Nike socks. So they still had to tape that up,
yeah.
Because, you know, God forbid someone see that little swoosh. It's all over if someone sees the swoosh on an Arsenal player.
But the fact that it's one of those things where everyone's drawn so much attention to it, it's kind of defeated the purpose.
What a bit of a joke. Like, I can't explain.
It's also, it's like, how far away is it to go to their own shop?
But London traffic to me is the issue there.
Yeah, I was going to say, also, like, they're in Hammersmith. Like, it's not that far from, like, surely there's, like, a Lily White's or a JD Sports or something. Like,
and a drone or something. Maybe there's airspace issues. I don't know.
Fun fact about the Chelsea socks. Chelsea only have one pair of non-white socks in their kit rotation this season. So, hence, because obviously, as you would know, some teams have, you know, pink and purple and blah, blah, blah. Like Everton have coral-coloured socks this year. But yeah, they only have one pair of the away socks, which obviously they had to pick up. I mean, it wasn't too bad of a look. They could throw back to this at some stage.
I just don't get how it, like, why it needed to happen at all. Like, they are socks. No one from Arsenal is going to accidentally pass to a Chelsea player because they see that they're also wearing white socks.
I'll tell you why. I get it.
They have the rules and blah, blah, blah. But it's just silly.
Sorry. It's so club rivalry, I feel like it might be the...
So the assistant referee can tell whose foot the ball came off. That's why your socks can't match. You ask and I tell.
But I thought I also heard that no one's allowed to wear white socks.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Apparently no away team's just ever. Not allowed to wear white socks at Stamford Bridge, yeah.
If Chelsea are always home in white socks, and yes, that makes sense. But
yeah.
Socks. Was it last pod? I'm having a breakdown over this stupid hat. Now it's socks. Next week, what will it be?
Gloves.
Shin pads.
What will
tape. Wristbands. Friendship bracelets.
Headbands. Those headbands that I hate. I want a proper headband that you have to tie up at the back, like ex Serena Bolden or nothing.
Oh, so you're not a fan of the Denise O'Sullivan pre-wrap, yeah.
The pre-wrap stuff. I don't like them.
The pre-wrap is so iconic for so many players. Like
I don't like it.
Alex Morgan. Like, it's for so many of them.
No.
But, what will the world of women's football serve me next to hate on?
On your
point, episode 192 to find out.
On your point, white socks, Eric, that's the reason that Everton... Whenever Arsenal play at Everton, they have to wear their away kit because their socks and shorts are also white and they never play in all red. It's a very silly rule. These kit rules are very silly. I know. But yes,
picture of like some very horrifically taxidermied animal, like a squirrel, where it's just sitting there like...
Yeah, I'm thinking of the fox. The fox taxidermy where his eyes are just like coming out of his head. Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Me trying to explain the laws of the game in terms of kits. Anyway.
Yeah. That sounds like rules.
But it's not like us as Australians to like care about white socks.
No, we were discussing pre-pod.
We would never do such a thing.
If it was in the NPL, if it was the NPL women's and you show up in the wrong kit, they'd be like, please just turn the shirts inside out. We have got a game to play. Please.
I mean.
Please. There's no time. Rescheduling.
she scores bangers again. She appears that Fox and the four Canadians brought the CONCACAF vibes with them.
Yes. God.
But
just absolutely, just to actually comment on the game, I didn't see a lot of it. I think I only saw a couple of clips here and there again because I have a job, I work, unfortunately. Shambles, absolute shambles. Don't know what the hell was going on. I don't think they knew what was going on, to be honest with you. Don't know if it was the socks or if they just decided that they were not playing football that day. Rubbish.
Yeah.
Rubbish. That's all.
Lauren James
That's
was on a tear in this game as well.
Ugh. She's so good. I
Yeah,
hate it.
she always
Hate it
plays really
so
well under the
much.
lights.
Ugh.
But
Anyway.
still by the way, still not the worst kid related mishap in the WSL history. There is, of course, the time Liverpool travelled to Yeovil without any of their kit. And had to use Yeovil's away kit. Oh, Emma has not heard about this, clearly.
How? How
This
do
is a
you look that
long,
up?
this is a long time ago. This is back when Yeovil was still in the top
Yeovil,
flight.
Yeovil, yeah,
Was,
it's Yeovil.
yes.
And I well, I'm glad I didn't see any misogynist using this as an excuse to dunk on women's football, because this has happened in the English Premier League with jerseys. As in, I remember Mark Bosnich about to kit up for Manchester United against Arsenal, and then the ref said, well, that's the same color as Arsenal's away kit, you can't wear that. So there's a delay. Someone gets the drabbest long sleeve gray top to for the first half, and in the second half he was wearing the United goalkeeper kit from 4 years previously because someone
Very
had gone to the
good.
club store. That is
Very good reference. Man United also changed kits halfway through a game in, I think,
they did
96 at the Bell.
because they were because the coach thought it was bad luck. Get out of this grey kit. You can't see each other. You're losing
They can't
yourselves in
see
the
each other
crowd.
because of the crowd. What a ridiculous law.
And then also there was another one. There was something involving a game between Aston Villa and West Ham. I don't know who was the away team in the English Men's Premier League. And so the whoever the away team was ended up having to use the home team's third kit to get the game underway. So no one had names on the back, just numbers. And if you're familiar with the colours for both teams, how do you forget that's a clash? It's West Ham, Aston Villa. Same colours. Anyway. It happens from time to time in English football. Actually, has anything like this happened in the dub? We've got the league where this you feel like this would happen once a fortnight.
Did this happen to the men's recently? Like somewhere in
I
the
feel like
middle?
the Mariners had a really bad. Everyone was just complaining about it. The Mariners
The
playing.
Mariners' jerseys this season had blue on the back and yellow
Yeah,
on the
like a
side.
solid
Basically,
blue
automatic kit
versus.
clash with everything,
Yeah.
effectively.
Most teams.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Sydney had
That
to
has been
change
resolved.
into the. Th Sydney had to wear away shirts with home shorts and away socks in the grand final in 2020. I can't think of anything like where teams have not. Like teams haven't have clashed or something like that, because I feel like most of that is kind of dealt with on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, because
Like
that should, I
they would
mean,
get briefings about
yeah,
this.
because I know definitely in the A leagues, and so you assume all the leagues, there's communication sent out during the week. I mean, rather less formally, I've been involved with this with my NPL club. It was like, there are, I know people at Manly are asking me, oh, who did, what do they wear? So I just sent a message and I said, oh, they're going to wear this, this, and this. And they're like, okay, we know what to bring now. So it should be that simple. Sometimes it's not. Yeah. So that's quite enough sartorial chat, I think, for one podcast. But yeah, results in the show notes. I mean, Chelsea and Manchester City still tied on points in the title race. Chelsea pipping Man City on goal difference. But yeah, on St. Patrick's Day, good to see a couple of Irish women score, get on the score sheet. Those two Irish women being Leanne Kiernan and Mary Fowler. Anyway, what else? After some horrific injury histories, good to see Eliza Campbell's back involved in football. She's in the Irish competition with Treaty United. Thanks to friend of Bionani, Lockie France, for telling me it's an old Newcastle Jets connection with Irish international Ciarán McCormack, who's now the CEO, I think, of Treaty United. So yeah, good to see. Wasn't on the team sheet this week, but like she's back in. she's back in the squad, back in that environment. So that's good. Because it's only going to be 6 more weeks, I think, before we actually talk about Eliza Campbell as a featured Matilda. So, yeah, what else is there? The French-based Aussies, just their teams thrashed their opponents. Yeah, and I expect to get a message soon from Stefan about the Nordic wraps, because that's all kicking off again. And in the Swedish Cup group stage, kind of pre-season thing before the league gets underway, IB Luik's team and Angie Beard's team won by many goals. Yep. Oh, NWSL Challenge Cup. Caitlin Torpy's San Diego Wave debut. We didn't have to wait long.
Yeah, and they won.
Got us have a trophy.
Yeah. And I want that jersey, San Diego.
I want that jersey. And
give it to me.
Yet another full game for the Wave for Emily Van Egmond. There's like, she only plays 4 games. I can't remember the last time she played less than 90 minutes for them. But yeah, they got Gotham FC in the Challenge Cup. Also, I have a NWSL commentary related gripe. I was watching Courage versus Dash, or the Denise Derby, as I like to call it. And so Courage won 5-1, but Denise O'Sullivan had committed a foul. A VAR review upgraded it to a yellow because of Studs accidentally stepping on the opposing player's boots. And then the analyst for the game, Gary Bailey for Manchester United keeper, kept manifesting a red for Denise. And now he is my most hated commentator. He kept saying, oh, that could have been a red card. I'm like, well, it really couldn't have, according to my knowledge of the laws. And then she committed another foul, and it was like, oh, this could be the second yellow. And I was like, why are you doing this to me? Anyway, that's my commentary related gripe for this week. State football. Madge, please, got any takes from Queensland? Sorry.
My only take from Queensland is really interesting.
What is this Lions losing?
I'm so confused. It's the Souths and Eastern Suburbs and Gold Coast. So in East got the win over Gold Coast, and then but Brisbane City seem to be sort of making a bit of a run for us. So they defeated Mitchelton 4-1. So yeah, it's definitely something new this season. So it looks like you could pick a lot of games to go to if you're in Southeast Queensland, getting out to some NPL games, and it's maybe not going to be quite as predictable as previous seasons, which is always good fun for us neutrals.
Yep, and Emma down in Victoria, I'm trying to establish who the newly promoted teams are. I think it's Bentley Greens and Essendon Royals who are playing literally as we speak, but mm-mm. No, it's not.
Incorrect. The promoted teams are Brunswick Brunswick Juventus and Essendon Royals.
Yeah.
And Essendon Royals are playing right now against Bulleen Lions at the time of recording. It is the 69th minute of the game. And
nice.
Essendon, I wasn't going to say it, so thank you. Essendon are currently beating Bulleen 2-0 at the Venator Club. But yeah, results-wise, it's looking pretty... some of it seems pretty standard and some of it's quite interesting. FV emerging, beating Calder 4-2. And what was the other result? There's one of them. No, that one was interesting. The other one that was interesting was Preston getting the win over Burundara. At least it was interesting to me. Mm. And then South Melbourne beating Bentley 4-1. Makes sense to me.
Mm.
And Heidelberg beating Alamein 2-0 also makes sense to me.
Continues to blow my mind. Caitlin Torpy was playing for Preston Lions last year, and now she's in the NWSL.
Stuff. You can do anything if you're willing to go to Preston for it. I'm not. I'm not going to Preston.
So you ain't got that in you? Is that...
I got a lot in me, but I have not got going to Preston. It's very far away from where I live.
Yeah, understood. And Dale, up for NPL New South Wales, we had the traditional Illawarra Stingrays washout when there's more than like 0.0001 millimeters of rain.
Yeah,
but
frustrating because this game wasn't even played at the spot that usually gets flooded. Like JJ Kelly Park is usually the culprit on the big floodplain near the golf course. And no, it was being played at Macedonia Park in Berkeley. For those of you that know, that's on the side of a hill. So how they got flooded, nobody knows. But yeah, a few interesting results out of this one. Sydney Uni back on the horse, beating Koalas or Spirit FC, as they're now known, 3-1. Manly got a win over the Northern Tigers. And Blacktown absolutely beat the pants off the Emerging Jets 6-0 up in Newcastle, wasn't it?
Yep, that's that was a big story.
The game that I watched was Uni of New South Wales versus Bulls Academy, which finished 1-1. Interesting game, but there's plenty of players to come back for Bulls into this team, I think. So Lira Toby going around, as we mentioned, for UNSW this year. Is Princess Beanie back there this season as well?
Oh, we shall see.
I guess we'll see soon when the dub finishes. But yeah, Rams on top, 3 out of 3 at the moment. Bottom of the table is the Institute and Jets. So pretty much as they were last year. It is actually as they were last year because Bulls are coming second and Ravens are also in third. So it's basically the same. Just watch the games from last year.
Yeah. And also for the uninitiated, we got rules up here. As youth academies, Institute and Jets cannot get relegated. However, despite the name, Bulls FC Academy, despite having Academy in their name, they're exempt from this rule, which kind of makes sense because they have Jess Seaman, who has a kid. So they're obviously
an actual academy. She only lasted 20 minutes or so on the weekend as well, which was pretty sad. But she'd been really good for them last season as well, actually.
She was excellent.
Home club of Avani Prakash, whose goal is lots of goals. And can play.
Yeah. And so, we probably expect to see Avani back there when her Western United commitments finish. Also, I was at Leichhardt Oval for RPO versus Olympic, and I saw the Queen of Blacktown, Ashley Croft, score. So, very, very successful day for me. And, those of you who know I love player scoring against their old clubs. So, Manly United coming from 2-1 down to beat Northern Tigers 3-2 away from home, thanks to goals from two former Tigers. Very, very funny. I love posting that post-match graphic. And I think that's it. So I think, we're ready for Queens, Kings, and Emperors of the Week.
Go for it.
Let's go. Matt, you can go first.
Well, yeah, I'm going to do something a little bit odd and give it to a Sydney FC player, but also basically a Queenslander, so that works out okay.
She is a Queenslander.
Yeah. But Courtney Vine, one, basically because I didn't watch the entirety of the game, but I did see her goal, and there's nothing like there's one of my favorite things in football is just a first time strike, and she hit that from the corner so cleanly, and it was just so beautiful, absolutely burying it. The keeper barely saw it before it was in the back of the net. Yeah, beautiful. I can only imagine if you're a player how you feel when you strike the ball like that first time and put it into the goal. So just, beautiful goals. But then, of course, her great celebrations with the Yellow Fever after the game. A bit of good-natured banter and fun. It's good to see that sort of fun banter between fans and players. And keeping it in, good nature and good vibes all around.
Yeah, that's right. I'm glad. That's right. You're glad you remind us that she's a Queenslander because that, for the newer fans, because she's not played for a Queensland team in so long, could be forgotten or possibly not known. Yes, you keep good on you for continuing to tell us.
Penn Power alum.
Yes. Emma, you can go next.
Yeah, so my Queen of the Week is Emma Checker, because she is retiring at the end of the dub season, which is very soon. She's been a huge player throughout many seasons playing with Adelaide, Buck, and with City, of course. City, yeah. She was captain at City for a couple of seasons as well. I've always enjoyed watching her play. It's a shame that her time has come, but I'm glad that she gets to be a player that can call time on her career when she wants to, as opposed to some that are forced out. But yeah, she's had a great career, played internationally as well, a couple of appearances with the Matildas as well. So, yeah, it's a sad to see her go, but she's had a great career. So, Queen.
Yeah, absolutely. We all agree. Dale, I love your selection.
Mine is the Rose Gold Young Matildas after their bronze medal finish at the AFC Under 20 Women's Asian Cup. Doing the double over South Korea, I guess. And yeah, good to see. I think they matched our best ever finish at that tournament. Obviously, the game against Japan didn't go their way, but you know, probably the next best thing is, you know, taking those lessons and then beating South Korea again, or Korea Republic again. Not in the snow this time, which was good. And obviously, there were some great scenes that were on the Tilly socials in the change rooms. And yeah, be good to have them back. But yeah, very very chuffed for them. I think this is going to be. We say it all the time, but this is a really good group of players that are going to come through to all age soon. Yep. And there's quite a bit of talent in there.
Yeah, and I just like watching Sasha Grove chase and tackle people. It's very exciting.
Yeah, I think it was you that pointed out she was celebrating with an SPS, an SPF 50 bottle of sun cream. So we love a sunsafe queen.
Yeah, be sun smart, kids. I got cooked at Leichhardt Oval once many years ago, and it was terrible, awful. So my selection. So going back to that NPL game between RP and Olympic, my latest attempt at a nickname, I'm going to try and call. Forget. Badgers just put something in the chat. I did see that. Rumors about Arsenal women coming to Melbourne.
Yes, but as a double header to the EPL game.
Where has that been announced?
May 24th? Friday, May 24th?
Yeah. So look, I'm not sure how confirmed this is, but it looks like it's come from a Herald Sun article saying it's going to be a doubleheader with the Tottenham game. So Arsenal women playing. So
it's Newcastle versus Tottenham. I mean, 3 days before the end of the men's English Premier League season, which I have.
Two very different fan groups together into the one stadium.
Yes. The Arsenal women's fans will love being around the Tottenham men's fans.
Yeah.
This is a really good idea.
These people. I look, you know what? It's just one article I've seen. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't surprise me if it's true, but I kind of hope it's not.
Well, anyway.
Sorry to dampen the.
I mean, puzzling scheduling is Australian football heritage. So what's one more night? Anyway, my selections are for Queen of the League. Oh, so my latest attempt at a nickname, I'm going to try and get people to call Charlotte Lancaster the Kiwi Katie McCabe, because in that Apia versus Olympic game, she's NPL New South Wales, she scored an Olympico, and then she set up two goals as Apia beat Sydney Olympic 3-0. She's also left-footed like Katie, and all of this was in the space of 9 minutes. So looking to be pretty box office is Charlotte, and hoping to get back into the dub, whether that's with Wellington Phoenix or some other team. My second queen is Ella Buchanan, who, as I said earlier, scored her first dub goal when the Wanderers beat Canberra. Had quite a year showing off her versatility. This is coming off an NPL season where she was part of a back three for Northwest Sydney Spirit. Then she won a Futsal Premier League Championship with Mountain Magic, a futsal club, and now she's playing on the left side of as a left winger, almost a forward for the Wanderers. So that's very impressive for Ella. That's it. So another long one, but thanks for your patience and thanks for those of you who listened to the end. It's time to wrap it up. Okay. So on behalf of Emma Burke, Magella Card, and Dale Roots, this is Eric Subihano signing off for episode 191 of the Beyond 90 podcast. Have plenty of good vibes, great coffee, sick tattoos, and razzlers, and happy belated St. Patrick's Day to the Irish and to everyone who wishes they were Irish. See you next time.